Okay. Hello. My name is Nicolette Lodico. I'm in New York City. And today is Thursday, February 10th, 2022. I'm joined via Zoom conference by Alana Nowitzki, who I will interview as part of the Oral History Summer School's Education Narratives Initiative. Alana, will you please introduce yourself and let us know where geographically you're joining this Zoom call from?
Sure. My name's Alana Nowitzki. I am joining this call from Ghent, New York.
Thank you. And thanks for joining us for this sixth phase of the Education Narratives Project and for sharing your experience as an educator over the past 2 years. Your generosity of time and reflections have been invaluable, and I think they'll continue to be, especially as we move beyond the pandemic and come to understand how the response to the pandemic has affected the landscape of education and society as a whole. I'm thinking about someone who will listen to this in the future without having listened to your other interviews. And I want to make sure that they know who you are to offer some context about you. So to begin, will you tell me a bit about you and your role as an educator?
Sure. Although I feel like it is a little more complicated than and it's been really affected by the pandemic, honestly. So up until 2020, I was the director of a preschool program called Catskill Wheelhouse Preschool. We have had a lot of, honestly, like as I am thinking back on it, so much change over the past 2 years. So many things have changed. And now I'm actually in the classroom. So up until January, I was co-directing, well, I guess December, I was co-directing our new array of programs, our post-pandemic array of programs. But then we lost one of our teachers who moved on to another school. And so now I am replacing her. And yeah, there's a lot of pandemic reasons for all of those things. But so that's me. That's my role. I'm an educator. I'm a classroom teacher right now. I have a K-2 class, a very small class of kids. We're a progressive educational organization. We offer a preschool program, an elementary school program, a toddler program. We also do summer camp, school vacation camps, and some community-based enrichment programs as well.
Wow. Is there anything else that you'd like future listeners to know about you as they hear your interview?
The parent part feels important. Also, I'm a mom. I'm a mom of a 7-year-old. So definitely in that, you know, she was in kindergarten when this all started and has never had a normal year of school.
That's really fascinating. I would love to hear a little bit more about your impressions of what your 7-year-old has gone through in the past couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I feel like, you know, when I listen to media coverage of what pandemic schooling has been like for so many kids, I feel like she's had a pretty good ride of things. Definitely plenty of loss in there and plenty of, like, you know, just as with adults, like, what's next? You know, what's school going to be like this year? But she was attending the Hudson Valley Sudbury School when the pandemic hit. So that's a free school. And so she spent her days playing. It was pretty in a pretty unstructured way. And then when the pandemic hit, you know, there definitely was kind of like that. A lot of, you know, missing her friends, missing the people she was spending her days with. she's a super extroverted kid. And so being alone in the house with her parents was not, you know, was really complicated for her. I mean, she just missed people. Like, she just wants to be talking to people all the time. So she would like chase, you know, the like the package delivered on the driveway and be like, hi. what would have been her first grade year, that was the year that schools were really, you know, doing remote schooling a lot of the time. And she, we homeschooled her that year. But Catskill Wheelhouse, the organization I work for, we also ran a forest school program. So she was with kids every morning during the week. And so, you know, I feel like in a lot of ways she had a, you know, a really lovely year. You know, she was just talking about it a couple of days ago. She was like, I loved forest school. I got to get all muddy. So, you know, she got to play with kids. She got to be outside all of the time. And that year really for both of us was a really, like, as much as there was so much like chaos and challenges for so many people, like, we were fortunate to have a really lovely year together. And, you know, I've always worked a lot. That's always been kind of a tension, you know, being a mom and trying to balance like work time and mom time. And she's always come to school with me. And so that was always really, you know, like, I'm your mom, but I'm also talking to everybody else, running a school, you know. So having a chance to have a slow year and to spend a lot more time together, I think was really great for both of us. So our personal experience was, there were a lot of silver linings for us. She definitely didn't have an academic school year, you know, and like, we homeschooled and we did work on reading, we worked on writing, and we worked on math, but, you know, she's a social kid who really needs to be learning in a social environment. And even with a mom as a teacher, she's like, no, but what, I don't want to talk to you about this. And so, you know, it's been, so this year, you know, Wheelhouse opened a small K-2 class. So she is getting to learn along with peers. And I think that's great for her. Like, she's like, oh, I got to read the same book as my friend, you know? I think she's having a lot of fun at school. And she also didn't have, you know, just kind of the context meant that, you know, a lot of the worry about learning loss and about kids not being where they're supposed to be, like, that's just not part of our educational model. You know, like, we know what the state standards say, but I'm also like, but why would you expect a 6-year-old to be reading at, you know, level G when like all of this is happening? And also, like, who cares? You know, like, yes, learning and growing is important. And yes, learning to read is important. But I'm, you know, I feel like given the context, having a letter attached to it or a number attached to it doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense to me. And so, you know, I think for a lot of kids, the kids who are in an environment that was going remote and then being in person and then going remote and then being in person, and everybody's worried about if they're covering the specific topics that they're supposed to be covering, like, that stress wasn't part of her learning or my educational life. So I don't know. I mean, it's been a couple of years for her, you know. It's definitely, there's been a lot. There's been really fun times, and there's been lonely times, and there's been, you know, certainly a sense of disorientation and change. But I also feel like a lot of the core pieces of what allows her to thrive, she has continued to have access to. So I feel like we're really fortunate in that way.
That's really lovely to have that time. Mm-hmm. You mentioned socialization and how your daughter was missing that. Can you talk a little bit about the loss of socialization and how that affected children, especially in the age range that you teach?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, I don't know. I mean, it's so hard to tease out all the different strains, you know, like so one thing I think is quite clear is that, you know, especially going into this school year, parents were really worried about that, you know, so parents were like, they've never been with another person, you know, we have 2-year-olds and our program starts at 18 months, but for a lot of 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds and even 4-year-olds, their parents were like, they haven't been away from me, you know, and they haven't even, just the things you would do where you would, like, you know, go to a barbecue and your aunt would hold the baby for a while, like that was not happening during 2020. So parents have definitely had a lot of anxiety about their kids coming to school. I feel like it's sort of hard to say with kids, though, because, like, as far as that separation piece of being away from their parents goes, because kids always have a really wide range of responses to that. So I feel like I haven't noticed a clear pattern of, like, kids have a harder time separating from their parents this year than they did before, because it's always kind of like some kids are ready to go and other kids are like, oh, where's my mom, you know, and that's always the case. I mean, in terms of social skills and, like, kids knowing how to interact with one another, I feel like I have too small of a sample size to really say that either. You know, my daughter, she got to keep playing with kids, you know, like there was that, you know, April 2020 or whatever that really was lockdown, and that, you know, we just had to find a rhythm for ourselves. And we did a lot of Zoom calls with grandma and my sister and every friend she could think of, and, you know, and talked to whatever delivery person was nearby, you know? But after that, like, things were loose enough that we felt like we could do outside play dates. And so I feel like her social life was not so constrained. I mean, I definitely personally, like, just in the past couple of months. Oh, here she comes. Oh, she did. She went in the other room. Just in the past couple of months, I really have been feeling that, like 2 years of just not having, like, you know, just like events where you would see people that, you know, like just the people that you run into frequently, and that sense of community from, like, being at the same potlucks and the same dinner parties and the same, you know, like that, you know, I feel like that. And I feel like she's an only child. And so I've always wanted for her that sense of, like, there being, like, people around that it wasn't just her and her nuclear family. And I've been feeling that lack lately. And I guess I do see with some of the kids in our group, like our 5 to 7-year-olds, some of them did have a pretty, like, isolated, like they were not interacting with a lot of kids over the past 2 years. I feel like my daughter still got a good amount of playtime. But yeah, we do have some kids who just seem to, like, not know how to, like, start playing with another kid, or, you know, don't know how, you know, like, don't, like, what do you do if someone's throwing snow in your face and you don't want them to, you know, like, how do you respond to that? So, yeah, I mean, I think it has an impact. I feel like I couldn't, like, you know, there isn't sort of, like, a really clear pattern that I could, like, be like, this is because of this. But yeah, I think it's affected kids for sure. And I also feel like, you know, among the kids that I know, I do also feel like the past two, like, many of the kids and families I know, both in professionally and personally, they've just, you know, like, they've changed so many school, like, they've changed schools, you know, so they were at one school in 2020, and then they did something else in 2021, maybe they were homeschooled, maybe they were doing some combination of something, and then they went to a new school in 2022, and so they're just, you know, so instead of it kind of being like, you go to school, and then you stay at your school, which I think was the experience for a lot of kids, there is this, like, I wonder what's going to happen next year, you know? And kids will talk about that, you know, they'll be like, where am I going to, you know, what school am I going to go to next year, you know? And I think that's affected educators too. I feel like there is just more of a sense of like less stability about like, you know, this is your school. This is where you will always go. And a lot more like, who knows what's going to happen.
This is it is absolutely fascinating to hear how these young kids will have completely different expectations about what they do every day than what we had, what their parents had.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, being halfway through the third school year affected by the pandemic, and I know a lot of things have changed for you and your school, but how do you feel about where things stand generally?
In education or in?
Education and in society, the state of education. Let's start there.
Well, yeah. I mean, I feel like that, you know, I feel that like there's a lot of talk about the like polarization and what a polarized society we live in. And I definitely, like, I feel that, you know, again, whether I could like quantify it, I don't know, but I feel like, I don't know how we're going to get through the, like, when are kids going to stop wearing masks at school? Should kids stop wearing masks at school? I don't know how we're going to get through that. And I don't know how we're going to, like, are they going to mandate vaccination next year? And like, how are we going to get through that? You know, I mean, obviously we will, but I just feel like there's going to be so much, like there already is so much tension around all of that. You know, so we're doing, this is the time of year when many families are like looking at programs and thinking about what they want to be doing next fall. So we're having a lot of parents come to visit. So come on tours. And we definitely are having parents come in like ready to fight, you know, kind of ready to be like, what are you doing about this? You know, they're not going to wear masks forever, are they? And it's just, it's so, you know, as a person who's, I'm not involved in making decisions for organizational policy right now, but I still, you know, I was up until December. And so I still definitely have my mind partly in that. You just can't win, you know, there's no answer that is going to be satisfying to everybody. And so it's just hard because so much of what you're trying to do when you're an educator is to build relationships and to build relationships with kids and to build relationships with parents. And the, like, these flashpoint issues just bring so much like tension and stress. And like, you can't, like, there's a lot, like, I feel like the approach that I try to take in my work is being really open to parents' perspectives and like trying to find a middle ground and trying to find a like, well, I see it this way, you see it this way. We both want what's best for your kid. Like, how can we work together to make that happen? But I feel like with the like, should kids mask or not? And should kids be vaccinated or mandated to be vaccinated or not? Like, there's just no, there's no middle ground, you know, there's no way to like work that through, you know. So, you know, we're a private school, we can say this is what we're doing and you all can take it or leave it, but I don't want to do that, you know. Like, I very much value being able to be like, how can we figure this out together, how can we find a solution that works for everybody? And like, we just can't, you know, without, we just can't. And so I feel like that, it just feels like there is so much, like, it feels like there's so much anger about everything. And it just feels really difficult to just like have a conversation without it being connected to all of this stuff, you know? And I feel like in our area too, like, there definitely is this, one of the things that was part of our like pandemic transition is that we moved from, we lost our previous space and we had to move to the next town over, which in a lot of ways is like a whole different world. So we had previously been in the village of Catskill, which is, has rapidly gentrified as a lot of people moved out of New York City over the course of the pandemic, and Catskill kind of got off like pretty fancy, and we moved to the next town over to Cara, which is still really like working class and like low income. And so we're kind of trying to like build relationships in our new home, and we're a private school, but a private school that really tries to be community-based and to provide a lot of programs to the community beyond just K to 12 private education. And so the issue of like masking and vaccination is all intertwined in this like cultural divide and this kind of cultural like we're like, hi, we're here, we want to serve all families, and people are like, are they gonna have to wear masks or not? Like, I'm never coming to any of your things if I have to give you vaccination records. They're just like, okay, you don't have to come. Like, I just am doing this arts workshop. Like, you can come if you want. You don't have to. Whatever works for you, you know? And so it just feels like in kind of like trying to navigate the work that I want to do that, you know, I feel like I've, part of what has interested me and what I've tried to do in my work at Wheelhouse is to bridge some of those like cultural divides and to try to be like, you know, like maybe there's a way that money coming into the area could actually make things better for everybody, but people would have to listen to each other and hear one another's perspectives. And that just feels so impossible now. Like that just feels so like it, like you just say hello and people are like, freedom, you know, I don't hear like so I feel like the state of education, you know, I feel like the state of society and the state of education feels so like fraught right now to me, and just so full of like tension and, you know, just really reactive, I guess, which maybe makes sense if everybody's on edge and has, you know, a lot of people have died and a lot of people have lost a lot. And, you know, I guess it makes sense that we would all be a little bit on edge, but it feels hard. And it feels hard to kind of like, what do you do with all that? You know, like, how do we, you know, kind of have, and when you're working with really little kids too, it's like so immediate. And so, you know, I'm working with 5, 6, and 7 year olds now, which is older than my typical age range. You know, I usually work with preschool kids, and, you know, it's just so immediate and so in the moment. And they just want to talk to you about like the shoes that they're wearing or like their favorite dinosaur of that day, or like, you know, how they like to eat ice cream, you know? And so like, on the one hand, you're trying to have a conversation with kids about like all the kinds of ice cream that they like. And then on the other hand, the other part of your brain is like, you know, has the surrounding all of that is this like, just this like intense, like everybody being really frustrated with one another and everything feeling like a flashpoint at all times. And so I feel like it's hard to like navigate between like the, kind of like the adult world and the kid world. And I mean, obviously they're intertwined, you know, but so I don't know. Yeah, it feels like a lot. It feels like, yeah, it feels like there's, yeah, it feels like the past 2 years, like there have been a lot of like wounds during this time. And it's really hard to imagine really how we're gonna patch them up, you know, or move forward. Like, I'm just like, how's this gonna happen? It's gonna be a vaccine mandate, maybe. Then what's gonna happen, you know? I don't know. So, I don't know. That's the answer I can come up with right now for your question.
Thank you. Have you ever had to, or how do you have a conversation about some of this polarization with kids in the age range that you work with?
I feel like I haven't specifically about masks. I definitely have about like politics, like, and like about some of the, like, you know, I don't know, like zeitgeist isn't quite the right word, but you know, like these like things that are very much in the like public conversation right now, you know, so actually the kids have been enjoying, they like to tell jokes at lunchtime. And so the joke today was, who was the nicest president ever? And everyone's like, I don't know. And the answer is the reverse Trump. <That's> like, you know, so like every once in a while, the kids will bring up like Donald Trump and they'll be like, no, he was a garbage president. No, like, no, don't say that about, I mean, don't say that about him. You know, so there's definitely like some talk about that. And then also like sometimes that like, you know, we talk a lot about race, about kind of racial dynamics, about, you know, we try to be an anti-racist school and to have that be like an intentional part of what we're doing. So we talk about it. But definitely like the kids will also be kind of trying to make sense of it on their own, you know, so every once in a while, you know, so we have this kid in the group who is Korean, and or his mom is of Korean ancestry, and he was like, I like to just say I'm Chinese. And then another kid said, that sounds racist. And so that was a moment where we had to kind of be like, huh, like, you know, those are the moments that come up with young kids where I'm kind of like, I'm not sure what's happening here, like what you're understanding about all of this. And so I'm not really sure what to say. But so, you know, but so definitely like the fact that like things can be called, you know, that people say that other people are saying racist things, you know, that's definitely something that kids are aware of. And they're sort of trying to make sense of like, what does this mean? You know, and I'm trying to make sense of like, what do you mean? And what, like, huh, what does that mean that you like to say that you're Chinese, even though your family is of Korean ancestry? Huh? You know, so I don't know, like we talk about, so how do we talk about some, how do we talk about polarization? I guess in two ways. I think that one is like, I do intentionally try to like introduce things to kids that are gonna help them to understand history a little bit more, and kind of like, you know, so if when people talk about things being racist, like what is that, why is that part of a conversation that we're having in our country? So like we have been talking at like on Martin Luther King Day, we started talking about the civil rights movement, and then we've kind of moved in, like that's continued into Black History Month. And so we've been talking about other aspects of Black history. And so like, that's how we sort of address that we're addressing in that way, kind of like the fact that talking about race is a conversation that's happening in our nationally. In terms of like more like political polarization, I struggle with talking about that a little bit because they are still pretty young, you know, and so all of it is pretty abstract to them. We haven't had like a ton of conversations about politics, I guess. We've definitely had conversations about like how different people have different thoughts about COVID and like think different things about like what precautions it's important to take or not important to take. And with that, like with most things, we'll just kind of talk about like how people have different perspectives. And then explain like, well, I think this because of this, you know, I think this because it's supported by this information that I have. We have actually been talking a lot about like, about finding good sources, because that's been an issue in our classroom in a lot of ways. Like, on the one hand, we're doing like a research project, and so we're talking about it in that context, but we also have a couple of kids who kind of everything that they say is vaguely like, one just likes to tell very like long story, you know, like, I have 9 dogs and 6 raccoons, and they're like, and I have another kid who seems to take a lot of information from like possibly conspiracy theories on the internet, you know, and I'll be like, how do you know that? And he'll be like, just look it up. You can find it anywhere. There's going to be a super volcano, and it's going to set off all the volcanoes in the world, and they're all going to start exploding at the same time. I'll be like, what is your source for that information? So we've been talking a lot about kind of like, you know, how do you know how, like, that you can't just say stuff, or you can, but then it's a story, you know, but if you're actually trying to make a statement, then it has to be supported by evidence. And how do you know, like, how do you know that the evidence that you're finding is good? So that's something that we've been talking about in our research project, but then also bringing it up in other contexts when kids say things that are somewhat outlandish. I don't think we've actually touched on that in terms of like, you know, COVID related stuff, but I feel like it could come up, and we would sort of have this groundwork of, you know, we know that a good argument is one that is backed up by reliable information. So we wear masks because this is the information that we have. But then that gets so tricky too, because right now I feel like that's not even, you know, I feel like I have lots of questions about that now, you know, and it's still the case that I feel like our public health guidance is like woefully inadequate and confusing. And, you know, our county public health department doesn't have any answers to anything, you know, so we call them and they're like, well, we don't know. And you're like, well, who knows then? Because I don't know. Like, I don't have a background in this. So that's another piece of kind of where we're at, is it feels like, you know, obviously information continues to evolve, but you know, well, at the same time as I'm teaching kids about finding reliable sources, like, I feel like I don't really know how to find reliable sources, you know? So, yeah.
On sources, I guess that leads me to wonder how engaged children of the age in your school, how engaged are they in the media and social media and the internet generally?
I think that our, well, I mean, I think our little kids, like our toddlers and our preschoolers, I don't think they consume much social media. I think that, and especially like the kids that we tend to get, we get a mix of kids, but a lot of our kids are like kind of hippie families, kind of, you know, like families who are not, you know, believe that kids should never watch screens until they give them screens by accident and realize that then quiet. You know, I don't know. So I think our little kid, you know, people who intend to be very good about screens, and then, you know, as time goes on and you get more tired, then you waver from some of that. But so the toddlers and preschoolers, I don't think engage with social media or much electronic media, like probably play games on people's iPads and stuff like that. The 5 to 7 year olds, like, it's funny because there's kind of an array in the class. So there are a lot of kids that don't have a lot of experience or exposure to mainstream media, but there's one in particular who has a lot more exposure. And so he's, in some ways he's like the cool kid, and everybody wants to know, like, he plays lots of video games and everybody wants to know what they are, and some of the other kids feel left out because they don't know what the video games are. And he also, like, there's also this joke that they like to tell about 911. What's the emergency? Someone's following me, or 300 people are following me. What? Because I'm on Instagram. Also, that's making sense, you know, and like he's the only one who knows what Instagram is, and then the other kids don't. So it's like, so on the one hand, he's really cool because he knows these things and the other kids don't. But then on the other hand, he's also always like making all of these media references that the other kids have no idea what he's talking about. And so he's a little bit of an outlier. So I think like him in particular, like he's the one who is kind of bringing in these things like the super volcano that's going to trigger all the volcanoes in the world to explode. Seriously, just look it up. It's all over the internet, you know? So he's kind of, I think, does engage with some of that, but I definitely see a need like for him. And I think probably, you know, as we grow and add, we'll add another grade next year, I feel like that's going to be a bigger and bigger thing, is like, well, how do you engage with that critically? And and they also, what did one of them say the other day? Something about how you can, what's easy to get in but not to get out of, and the joke is trouble, but his response was video games, you know, like, so this like that like they're sort of aware, he's sort of aware of this like addictive quality to media. And so like, you know, I would love to, I haven't thought a lot about how to kind of like help kids engage thoughtfully with all of that, you know, to be like, how much video games do I really want to play, you know, and like, how do I make sure that I stick to that? But it's something that I would like to think about more. And then also just like, yeah, media consumption, like, I don't know, how much time do you want to spend on social media? And that's something I'm starting to think a lot about for my daughter too, is like, I don't know, can you just watch videos on YouTube? I don't know, you know, how much do I need to curate that? How much do I need to pay attention? Yeah, and I guess like being of a philosophy where I like really like I believe in kids engaging with the real world, and I believe in kids kind of like leading their own learning, like on the one hand I have the impulse to be like, go figure it out, you know, like you can figure out how to like climb trees, like go figure out how you want to be with the internet, you know, but then on the other hand, you know, I know there's a lot of harmful stuff out there, and I know there's a lot of addictive qualities to screens, and I know, you know, like I know all these things. So like, I don't really know how to navigate that. And I don't really know how to, I've been thinking about how I'm using technology in our class also. And I don't have great, I haven't resolved that for myself yet.
So much to think about. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'm wondering if you can walk me through your current daily routine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. We start our day at 9. With a little bit of playtime. So kids arrive and they settle in until about 9:30, and they, you know, they can engage with basically whatever they want in the classroom. There's not a ton, you know, there's not a ton out there. Doesn't get too wild, but they can pick what they want to do when they first come in. And they like to say hi to each other and chat. Then after that, we clean up, we take care of our classroom pet, and we get ready for our morning meeting. And we do that for about half an hour, and then we go outside for snacks. So we're still doing outdoor eating time. So that's kind of a pandemic related thing, which on the one hand is really nice because they get a chance to run around a little bit. But on the other hand, it makes it take like way longer, especially in the winter. Like, to get everybody's clothes on. It's like, it takes a really long time. So we have snack, then we come in and we do a segment of academic work, either writing or math. And then we have a block of time that's like an interdisciplinary project work time. And then after that, we do another little block of literacy stuff. And then we have lunch also outside. And then the afternoons vary depending on the day of the week. So two afternoons a week, they are out in the forest. So we've kept that piece of like nature-based learning. So they just go out in the woods for really kid-led exploration. Then we have another day during the week. They work on like a school job. So they do, they work on a project that is like benefiting our school community. And then a third day of the week, we do like a community-based learning piece. So that either means that they're going out on a walk. Like in the fall, they were going out on walks a lot, and they were studying like the electricity in our area. So they were like counting how many houses had solar panels and like mapping where the power lines ran and stuff like that. And with what we've been working on recently is they've been putting up this a little free library, and they've been making books. Like they've been writing their own books to go in a little free library. I'm sure everybody wants to read. And then the fifth afternoon of the week, we do what's called open workshop. So they get to do their own project with the materials in the classroom it's kind of like free reign. And then they go home at 3. Then we do a story at the end of the day, and then they go home at 3. So that's our flow for my class.
Could you describe the room itself?
Yeah, sure. I didn't set it up. So the teacher that we had in the fall set it up, and it's super cozy. It's really cute. It's got, we've got our meeting rug has a big snake on it. It's got like a big black snake, which is perfect for 7-year-old boys. I mean, or girls, but we just happen to have a lot of boys in our class who very much like the snake. There's a lot of like cozy little areas. So there's a library area with a really soft zebra striped rug, like a shag rug that they really love to lie down on. There's like a back big mirror in the back, which is where our classroom pet, the hermit crabs, are. And it's got little twinkle lights. So it feels pretty homey, I think. And then we have different areas set up around the room for different learning tools. So there's a shelf of math manipulatives, and we have a block area, and then we have a shelf of art supplies, and then an area where all their like writing folders and reading books that they're working on are set up. And then tables that are pushed together for group work. And then a big shelf of games and puzzles. And then we have an area of the room that is kind of all about the different studies that we're doing. So we're kind of adding notes and adding things that we're learning about as we move through. And then we also have a lot of the research project that they're working on right now is about volcanoes. So there's also like tons of volcano models all over the place. So yeah.
It sounds magical. It really does.
It's pretty fun. We have a good time. Lots of jokes.
We talked a little bit about remote education and how it may have affected your daughter as opposed to the kids in your school. Do you have any opinions about remote education generally as an educator? What are you and what are you hearing from your peers about success or not?
I mean, coming, having spent most of my career working with preschool kids at like I don't think there's any reason to do remote education with preschoolers. I just say, I mean, like, I feel like you could do, I feel like you could do kind of like creative remote. Like, I don't think it makes any sense to have preschool kids be on a computer for like any amount of time. I feel like you could do things where you would like drop off activity boxes and then have some like interactive piece where like you write to the family and they write back to you. Or like, I feel like you could do stuff like that, although that puts a lot of pressure on parents. But I think it's totally pointless to try to get preschool kids, pointless and like perhaps damaging, you know, depending on like what the expectations are. Like if you're expecting a preschool kid to sit in front of a computer for more than 10 minutes, like learning, you know, like that's, you know, either they're just going to not pay attention or you're going to yell at them and they're going to have, you know, reduced self-confidence because of that. You know, with older kids, I think it probably to a large extent, it depends on like what it's like, you know, I also don't think that it makes any sense to have like a kindergarten kid be in front of a computer for 6 hours a day. Like, I don't think that is very confusing to me that was like the solution to the pandemic, because like, there's a lot of evidence about how that's not good for kids, you know, like we're talking all the time about how kids shouldn't have lots of screen time. And then you're like, oh, there's a pandemic. We're going to have you go to school for 6 hours on a computer. Like, this doesn't make any sense to me. You know, it just feels like it doesn't fit with like any of the evidence about how like young children learn, which is like multi-sensory and active. And like, that's not, you know, that's not, I mean, a screen is by definition two-dimensional. You know, again, like I feel like there are ways that you could make it interactive and you could have kids be, you know, engaging actively. But there's also going to be a lot of time like sitting and looking at a screen. So, you know, I feel like in the early childhood age range, like up to second grade, like I continue to be surprised at the fact that that was the solution. I feel like kids would have been way better off if they just got to roll around in the mud for a year. You know? I feel like I hear mixed things from like from parents and from other educators. I feel like I've definitely heard from parents who felt like remote schooling, and not just remote schooling, but like remote schooling, then in person, then remote, then in person, then remote, then in person, was really hard for their kids. I also have heard from parents that actually like the in-person school during that intense COVID year was worse than Zoom school, because they just like couldn't move, you know, were really expected to like sit at their desk all day, not be interacting with anybody or getting up. And that's like, that's not what you do when you're five. But I also hear from educators that like, it was really great for some kids, you know, that there were kids who could engage via remote schooling in ways that they couldn't when they were in the classroom. And I can totally see that. I mean, I feel like I probably would have worked really well as a child, like not having, like, you know, just being able to think, you know, because I am a person that takes time to process and takes time to think. And so being in a classroom can be really distracting. So I feel like I heard mixed things, but I guess I really like my core values or my core beliefs as an educator about what a quality education is really are holistic and are about like connection and social connection and emotional connection and learning where you're creating something and learning where you're like actively engaging with the world around you. And I feel like my goal as an educator is not to have kids be at a certain reading level or to be able to do like a certain list of math skills. Like my goal as an educator is to have them be competent people who can be active agents for change in their world. And so I don't think you can do that over Zoom. Like, I think there has to be a component of connection and also of like doing things with your hands and your body. And I think I believe that's really essential to education. And so, especially for young kids. And so I think that I think it would be really hard for online school to do those things. I mean, I have seen some interesting models of really kind of taking remote education and kind of like using all of the unique qualities about it. And I can see how that is sort of, you know, like that's interesting, you know, like instead of being like, we're going to take the lesson we were already doing and just do it on a video, really being like, well, if we do remote schooling, we can connect with people all over the world, you know, like people all over the world can like look out their window and show us the birds that they're seeing out there and show us like what their street looks like, you know? So I can see like an online learning or like a remote learning that took as its goal, kind of like maximizing the qualities of remote schooling by being like, hey, we can connect with people from everywhere and learn all these different perspectives and learn all these different things. Like if there was remote schooling that was like, let's learn about geography, like that sounds great. Like that makes a lot of sense to me. But remote school, that's kind of like, I'm going to teach you math by talking to you on Zoom. That doesn't make any sense to me. So I guess, I don't know, a long-winded way of saying like, I think that the nature of people is that we are embodied and that there are really irreplaceable components of learning, especially with young kids, that are just not adequately met over an internet connection. But that I think online learning could certainly meet some goals and have very like effective uses, but I guess used intentionally and not used as a like kind of catch-all. And I also think, and the other thing about remote schooling is that I feel like it totally ignores the whole childcare piece, you know, and it's just sort of like, that doesn't count, you know, like for schools to say, like, we're doing our job by giving everybody a Chromebook. You're like, no, that's what, you know, like, parents, and I, you know, and as like, you know, as an early childhood educator, as a person who like that care piece and the childcare piece, it's kind of like a constant thing in my mind of like, we're not babysitters, you know, that. Like the discourse in which like teachers are like, we don't take care of children. you're like, but children need care. And like, you do take care of them. And like, that's not a bad thing. You know, I definitely think like Carol Murray is one of the other people who's been interviewed for this. And she's written this amazing book about care and education. I feel like I think about that all the time, that like those two things are intertwined. And yet the care piece has been really devalued. And people are just like, what, you know, like, you know, if you want to be respectable and have any standing in society, then I'm not a babysitter, you know, you have to say I'm not a babysitter, but how about if we really value that piece, you know? And so I feel like that, like in thinking about remote schooling, it's kind of like, it makes that whole piece of like, well, who's actually taking care of kids? Like it totally takes that out of the conversation, you know, just makes that totally invisible. And it's like, well, but so who is taking care of the kids? And like, how do we, you know, certainly like the fact that women are being pushed out of the workforce and blah, 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 that's been, you know, covered a lot in the media during the pandemic, but like, there isn't any, like, I am not, I, like, there still is no solution to that. Like there still is no, you know, like there was Build Back Better that isn't happening. You know, you're kind of like, okay, so like, what's the plan for this? You know, like what, and like, can we please talk, you know, like that, I mean, the pandemic has had a huge impact on schools, but its impact on the childcare industry is like even more striking. Well, maybe not even more striking, but like it, you know, the childcare system was broken before and it's just totally a disaster now. It's just not, and I don't know what's going to happen. And I don't feel like that gets enough like coverage or discussion. I mean, again, like people talk about it like, oh, childcare is in crisis. And you're like, okay, so like, are we going to try to make it so women can go back to work if they want to? Like, are we going to try to make it so childcare businesses can stay open? You know, what, you know, again, like, what's the plan? Where's the leadership? So yeah, that's what I think about remote schooling.
Thank you. What do you hope that we carry forward with us from everything we've learned in the past 2 years? What do you hope for?
I don't know. I don't know. I feel like I'm in sort of an interesting, like, I feel like I'm in a, I don't know. Like, honestly, at this point, I just don't know. I feel like kind of mid-pandemic, I feel like I did feel sort of hopeful about some of this stuff, like, especially like maybe there's a way we can reimagine education, you know, like maybe we can kind of be like, oh, wait a second, like, can we be really creative about how we're educating kids outside of school buildings? You know, like, wouldn't that be an amazing idea? You know, or like we were trying to work on, you know, could we have these like little community-based childcare pods, like all over the area that could, where people could connect to, so that they could still work and have their kids be cared for, you know? So I feel like there was a moment when I was like, maybe things could change. Maybe we could like, maybe this is gonna break everything open and we can explore like new ways of learning and new priorities in education. And we can really acknowledge like all this work of care that is happening and make that visible and fund it. You know, like maybe people will really realize this now. But now I don't know. Now I'm just like, oh, and maybe it's me personally, you know, like maybe it's just me and kind of like where my organization is at and where, you know, it's just this kind of like, ugh, you know, like everybody's just mad about everything. And like, no matter what happens next year, everybody's going to be mad about everything. And like, we're not going to think of any new solutions. We're just going to keep doing the same stuff, except now it's more broken because it's been limping along for 2 years. And like, you know, I don't know. So I don't know. I'm not always really good at the hopeful part. Pretty good at the like, everything's terrible. I mean, I do hope that, I hope that there will be a response to the impact that all of this has had on kids, you know, that, like, even if it is just individual teachers in classrooms, or even if it is just, individual, like, adding more mental health support, I would like it to be on a bigger scale, but even if it is just in individual relationships, kind of people being like, wow, like you're coming back to school for the first time ever, you're in third grade, you know, that be acknowledged and responded to, so that kids can, you know, kind of have their experience like seen and valued, and kind of not, that I hope attention will be paid to that instead of just like, get back to your reading. You need to be at level M by the end of the day. But yeah, if I mean, so much, like, what's the statistic? Like 50% of teachers are thinking of leaving. Like, you know, I don't know. I don't know what I mean. I hope that somebody makes a plan. I hope someone's like, oh, this doesn't work. Like, oh, we have to pay teachers more. Like, I hope for that. But I don't think that's going to happen. So, yeah. Yeah, I can't really imagine a great outcome. Sorry.
Thank you. We are just over an hour. So I want to give you an opportunity to add anything else that you might want to add, even if it's just something that you want to remember about these past few months.
Well, I mean, I guess one thing that I would like to remember is that, like, it has been really great to just have kids, like, doing a classroom day again, you know, and the 2020-2021 school year, that was the year that we just did forest school, and that was really amazing. And a lot of it, like, it was amazing to just be outside all the time, but it had to be sort of limited in duration, because, like, you can only do that for so long in winter or in summer, and so yeah, it's really great to have kids just together for a full school day again, and just having them just be their own little community, you know, and have their little, like, rituals that they do together, and, like, their joke time, and, you know, like, just all these, you know, to really have that they do really have this rhythm, and they have this like familiarity with one another that they can only have if they're together a lot, you know. And so that's been really nice to just get to see them doing their day.
I bet it has.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. If it's all right with you, I'll stop recording now.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate your time.
This is fun. Really wonderful.
Yeah.